Author and journalist Tom Wilbur has been in the newspaper business more than 20 years, covering the business, health, and environment beats. He has reported on shale gas development in New York and Pennsylvania since 2008. He was among the first reporters to provide daily coverage of events in Dimock, Pennsylvania, which has since come to symbolize the national controversy over the issue. His new book is Under the Surface: Fracking, Fortunes, and the Fate of the Marcellus Shale. Control over drilling rights is at stake in the heart of Marcellus country, northeast Pennsylvania, and central New York. The decisions by landowners to work with or against the companies and the resulting environmental and economic consequences are scrutinized by neighbors faced with similar decisions, by residents of cities whose water supply originates in the exploration area, and by those living across state lines with differing attitudes and policies concerning extraction industries. Again, the name of the book is Under the Surface. We welcome Tom Wilbur to the roundtable this morning. Tom, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being with us. I appreciate it. Just in what I read in the introduction, the fact that you came to this story in 2008, we really haven't been playing with this for very long, have we?
No, we haven't. 2008 is really when things started to break locally, and we started seeing that we're learning what shale gas development was. Before that, we had reported a little bit about conventional drilling in western New York, but it wasn't a big story. It was just one of many environmental and health stories in central New York. In 2008, it really became a big story when a group of farmers in eastern Broome County negotiated a deal with XTO Energy, that's a Houston company, to open 50,000 acres of land in eastern New York, eastern Broome County, to drilling for $110 million plus royalties. And that's when we really started to see this story take off.
One of the things that is fascinating to me in the book, which I was not aware of, you have a United States Department of Energy map very early on in the prologue, which shows where shale gas development is either being considered or is actually taking place. And when you look at the Northeast and the central and northwest part of this country, it's actually quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, there's many shale plays throughout, and there's still shale plays being discovered. 4 years is really a very short time in exploring and developing shale gas plays. This is still a relatively new technology. And just speaking to the Northeast, there's many areas in New York State that are still unexplored. Prospectors feel that there's a lot of potential, and it's worth noting that the Utica Shale is beneath the Marcellus Shale, and the footprint is at least as big, and it extends much further north into upstate New York.
For someone covering this, we've been talking about this issue on this show for a long time, on the station for a long time, and I understand the issues, but there is so much information, and it's so complex. As a reporter who, this is your beat, Do you have a sense that you know what's going on, that you get it?
Yeah, well, I think that really cuts to the heart of the biggest issue for me and what I find most interesting, and that is the transparency issue. A lot of people ask me, am I pro-fracking, am I against fracking? And my answer is I'm really all about, my fight is all about transparency and full disclosure, and I think as a journalist, what I find most interesting in this is that there is relatively little transparency in this industry. And traditionally, it's been grandfathered in to all sorts of exemptions. It's exempt from EPA hazardous material handling laws. In 2005, it was exempt from the Clean Drinking Water Act. So in terms of your question, do I know what's going on and do I get it? I think we're all learning every year, and I think that we're starting to see, A, the scale and intensity of shale gas drilling is far different. It's an order of magnitude greater than the traditional drilling we've seen. I think that's the most important thing in terms of cumulative impact, environmental impact, handling wastewater resources, the sheer footprint of what it covers, the amount of stakeholders in terms of either leasing their land or experiencing some sort of impact, direct impact from drilling. So I think those are the key points in terms of do we understand what's happening and do we get it? A is the industry and what they need to tell the public and what they have to tell the public, and B is the sheer impact, size, intensity, and scope of the drilling.
When you talk about transparency and misinformation, how much misinformation do you believe is out there right now that people on both sides are gauging their platforms on?
Yeah, I think the main thing on the industry side, the main myth really is that there has never been any problems with groundwater. We don't have to worry about it. There's no documented issues, and the environmentalists really have nothing to go with. They're just making all this up. And we know that there have been documented problems with methane migration, and the more they drill in northeastern Pennsylvania, the more they see problems with methane migration in particular. So I think that's the main issue. Again, this is a transparency thing. And in terms of the large institutional environmental movement, the industry will say that a lot of their fears are exaggerated, that if there's drilling in the area, every problem around every problem that results around a drilling well is blamed on the drilling well. If animals start to lose their hair, well, it must be the drilling well's fault.
The old saying of politics makes strange bedfellows. Because of this and because of the money involved, where people are siding on one side or another of the issue is fascinating to me in this book.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? From in where I sit, which is very close to the Pennsylvania border with New York State, you really see two different states with very different comfort levels with how this is approaching. And they're in completely different political places. Pennsylvania has a legacy of mineral extraction with coal mining, quarrying, with the oil wells dating back to the Drake time in the mid-1800s, and just a different political culture in terms of exploitation and land exploitation. In New York State, you have a history of land preservation in the Catskills, the Finger Lakes, the Adirondacks, a much different regulatory attitude, and a much different comfort level. You don't have the industry, the extraction industry, really, that has worked historically throughout New York State. So in one state, you really see the Marcellus developing full bore, and then you just go across the border and you see the opposite extreme, where New York State is holding back until it can really get a better look at the policy, and you have the activists and the environmental movement, which has really been a huge influence in that.
So two points that I'd like you to address with us about what you just said. One is, it seems I understand the differences in the states, and you explain that beautifully. In New York, didn't we seem to get, like, when we started to get close to screwing up New York City? I mean, isn't that really when all hell broke loose in that regard?
The political influence of New York City cannot be overestimated. That's huge. There's a lot of people in New York City, a lot of activists in New York City, and they are big stakeholders in this. And as you point out, the Delaware River watershed is the main drinking source for New York City and for Pennsylvania. And it's traditionally been protected land. It runs through the Catskills. And that watershed lies over one of the most lucrative parts of the Marcellus Shale. So this incidentally is also very close to the area where the farmers that I talked about earlier in the program, when the story first broke, they leased their 50,000 acres to XTO Energy. This is right on the edge of that watershed.
Right.
So that drew immediate attention to this. And right now, a lot of the political influence, I'll just name Robert Sweeney, who's an assemblyman from the Long Island area. He's head of the Assembly's Environmental Conservation Committee, and he has a bill now that would extend the moratorium for another year and also call for a full health impact assessment of this. The DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, has been looking at the environmental issues, but Sweeney is saying we really need to do an exhaustive health impact statement here. So yes, New York City's watershed has been a huge influence in the way things have happened in New York, or not happened in New York.
So it seems to me, while two things, one being that as Pennsylvania goes on and has a bit of a track record now, that we in New York can look at that and look at what went right and what went wrong and learn from that. Is that a fair assessment?
That's absolutely right on. This Pennsylvania had a big head start on this because the shale play developed from the south up. Range Resources was one of the first pioneers in the Marcellus, and that happened in southwest Pennsylvania. And then Cabot started developing further north, and a lot of other companies got into the play, and they started working the play north. And of course, we know that in New York State, the DEC said, wait a minute, we have to update our policy here before we understand how to permit for this. But we got, especially the media in New York State, was able to go right across the border and see what was developing in Pennsylvania. And there was a lot of production happening. When the price of gas was high, there was a lot of royalties flowing. People were getting rich. The industry will still hold up. Williamsport, Pennsylvania, is the boom town, along with others, where the bed and breakfast, or the, I'm sorry, the hotels in the hospitality industry is really thriving from this. The construction industry is thriving. But also we were able to see when Norma Fiorentino's well exploded January 1st, 2009, that was kind of a turning point where everybody started saying, wait a minute, there's something else here. How can the well explode? And that was the beginning of a very long public confrontation between residents and Cabot Oil and Gas about the cause of the explosion, who's accountable for methane migration, who's accountable for groundwater pollution. The DEP, that would be the Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection, got involved under the Rendell administration and ordered Cabot to build a water line to compensate landowners. And it was a very long, protracted debate that's still going on now under Corbett's administration.
It seems to me, I mean, without getting into, you know, whether you, what side of the issue you're on this, but as all of this information comes in, we learn about what's going on in Pennsylvania. There are concerns of that in New York, of stepping back and just taking your time, and as much time as that takes makes sense.
Yeah, well, that's certainly a sound argument, and I'll add here that there's another variable with how all this plays out in New York, very important, and that is the market for natural gas and
right.
the price of natural gas. And now we're seeing, well, let me just back up and say in 2008, we were seeing record high prices for natural gas, and that was really fueling the prospecting rush. It was like a gold rush. People were getting much larger returns for leasing land, royalties, and there was a much higher incentive for the gas companies to push, and develop and explore new horizons. The price of gas has since fallen, and that's largely due to the sheer volume of gas that's coming online from these shale gas plays throughout the country and in Pennsylvania in particular. And that has dampened the incentives for the industry to push, both economically, legally, politically. As you know, the industry is very, very powerful in all these regards and can put a tremendous amount of influence into shaping their own destiny in any given area, depending on what the incentives are. And when the price of gas is so low, it really makes it politically much easier for Andrew Cuomo or anybody else in New York State to put the brakes on this.
It seems to me, and again, I'm curious as to your perspective on this, but for you, for me, we're talking about this story all the time, and it's very much on our radar. We hear from our readers, we hear from our listeners, and they are concerned, and there are great issues here that are being discussed. And then you hear the President of the United States talk about this almost as a guiding star in the future during his State of the Union address. And it seems to me as there's a huge disconnect from that message to what is going on in the Empire and the Keystone States and putting a blind eye to the very real concerns, questions, and debates that are raging on.
Yeah, it's become very political, and here we are in an election year, and I think you can attribute a lot to what President Obama is saying about shale gas development to the dynamics that he faces, the polarization of issues in an election year. And I think his energy policy, I guess if you want to call it that, a lot of people will say it's not an energy policy at all. We've never had one. We're just going hand to mouth with that. But the all-of-above energy policy is kind of a sweeping political position that is, I think, designed to try to make everybody happy without upsetting anybody too much. He's definitely giving a nod to shale gas development as the bridge to the future, is a big piece of it. And so it's interesting that, you know, he took the Keystone pipeline, the tar sands pipeline, off the table, which was a big political issue earlier. And my own view is, and who knows what all the ins and outs are politically, is that he has to give some sort of concession to the GOP and the far right, who are the drill baby drill contingent, right. The same way he did with the offshore drilling. And that's just my own take on it, but certainly is a political issue. And a lot of the people, the activists against shale gas development, have been disappointed with President Obama's position on it.
When you look at what the next year will bring on this issue, obviously, there's still going to be a great deal of debate, and at some point, a decision is going to have to be made. But that won't be the end of it, will it?
No, and I guess a decision, I guess we could talk about that in New York State in terms of what will happen from the governor's office with the SGEIS, Supplemental Generic Environmental Impact Statement, and that's, of course, the policy document that the state will use to begin permitting these wells.
I'm very impressed that you can just rip that off. It's
I've had a lot of practice.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah.
But once that is approved, there is a feeling like, well, okay, here we go, permitting will start. But really, that's just in the executive branch. You have the things playing out in the
sure.
judicial branch right now that are very important. That's this concept of home rule. And when I ripped off that name, Supplemental Generic Environmental Impact Statement, if anybody takes home anything from that name, it should be the generic part of it. Because the way the state's set up right now is to generically permit these wells across the state without necessarily regard to the political cultures or dispositions of a given municipality. And the municipalities are challenging that. And there's some courses, and this is an idea called home rule. A local municipality should decide whether they can have shale gas drilling in an area or not. And there's some important issues right now in the courts in New York State that will determine whether Dryden versus Anschutz is one, and the state Supreme Court, that's the lower court in New York State, has upheld Dryden's ban on shale gas drilling, and the industry is challenging that. And so that's something going on in the judicial branch, and then you have in the legislative branch to some of the things we've talked about locally with Sweeney's bill, and also nationally with the FRAC Act, which has been introduced several times. It will probably be reintroduced depending on what the composition of Congress is next year, and that could also influence whether the industry comes under EPA control. So there's all these other factors, plus the market factors, that will determine the future of shale gas development.
I can't tell you, this is such an even-handed approach, and I learn so much about both sides of this issue, all sides of this issue, I say, because there are many, it's multifaceted, and really incredible reporting. Tom Wilbur is the author of Under the Surface, Fracking Fortunes and the Fate of the Marcellus Shale. He's going to be speaking about the book and signing it at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck on Friday night at 7:30, and anyone interested in this topic should go and hear Tom and pick up a copy of the book while you're at it. It is Under the Surface. Tom Wilbur, a great pleasure to have you on the program.
It's a great pleasure, Jill. Thanks very much.
Best of luck in your work. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.